Hello, and welcome to today's reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Thursday, April 22nd on Iris. I'm your reader, Aaron. Our first article on the front page, County Mask Rule Still in Effect, Board Plans Vote. Dubuque County Board of Health members will decide on May 19th whether to end the mandate by Benjamin Fisher. Dubuque County Board of Health members are leaving the county's mask mandate in place for now. However, they plan to vote May 19th on whether to end the mandate meant to slow the spread of COVID-19 before its current June 15th sunset. At a board meeting Wednesday, members acknowledged the progress the county has made through the COVID-19 pandemic since November 2020, when the mandate that people wear face coverings in public went into effect. Quote, "The situation we have now is completely different than where we were in November or even in February," end quote, said Dr. Hendrik Schultz, a member of the board. Quote, "We have vaccinated the majority of vulnerable people we wanted to vaccinate. If you have a good year in flu vaccinations, if you get past 60%, it's stellar," end quote. Schultz is an immunologist and chief medical officer for Medical Associates Clinic. During the meeting, he gave a presentation on the existing vaccines against COVID-19, their efficacy and effectiveness, and possible side effects. The board also heard a presentation from Dubuque County Health Department Executive Director Patrice Lambert on COVID-19 activity in the county. Lambert described the county's positive case trend and hospitalizations decreasing, but also showed a report rating transmission in the county as high. Members also heard from 11 community members during a public comment portion of the meeting. All of them said they opposed the mask mandate and asked that it be rescinded immediately. Quote, "We will get a ton of information about testing, positive numbers, and deaths," end quote, said Wayne Kennecker, mayor of Sageville, who has opposed the mask mandate in the past. Quote, "We will not get the right information to determine whether we have reached the criteria needed to rescind the resolution. End the mask mandate tonight. Change message to a strong recommendation. Restore some of the trust and faith people should have in the county board of health in the health department," end quote. That call for restoring faith in the health agency was frequently repeated among critics of the mask mandate. Most speakers also stressed their belief in the importance of personal choice when it comes to health decisions. County Supervisor Harley Pahoff also voiced his support for rescinding the mask mandate. He noted that when the Board of Health and Supervisors last voted to extend the county mask mandate, they set it to expire June 15th, when qualified individuals in Phase 1B, including those 65 and older and frontline essential workers, had a chance to receive a vaccine, or when the mandate was rescinded by the Board of Health. Quote, "I think we should maybe move to a strong recommendation and not the mandate," Pahoff said. "We're only as good as our word," end quote. Schultz pointed out that state officials had since expanded the 1B group to include individuals 16 to 64 with high-risk conditions, which also expanded the number of people who needed to be vaccinated to meet the county's goal. He said that the decision of whether to rescind the mandate would come down to how much severe illness and death county officials would be comfortable with. Quote, "We will never prevent illness from COVID-19, Schultz said. "It will be an annual occurrence. We will always have people who die from COVID. What is the level of death, illness, and disability that is acceptable for the baseline? I don't think we are over the hump entirely yet," end quote. Other members agreed, noting especially that there are still residents 65 and older or with high-risk conditions who have received one dose of vaccine but not the second. Board member Katie Jones agreed with other members but also sympathized with the opponents of the mandate who spoke. Quote, "I understand the public placed a lot of trust in us," she said. "I'm really thankful for those who hopped on board with us during that surge. I don't want them to think we're unappreciative and don't see the difference they're making," end quote. Board Chairman Tom Becken recommended the board vote on May 19th to give time for more people to receive second doses of the vaccine. That would be less than a month before the current sunset of June 15th. Rescinding the mandate early would also require action by the Board of Supervisors, which would require a two-week public hearing process before the matter could come to a vote. Supervisor Ann McDonoghue pointed out that the June 15th sunset was approved in part to align with the end of the year for local foods. She also reminded the public that an end to the county's mask mandate would not affect the mandate currently in effect in the city of Dubuque. Our next front page article, Family Seeks Autism Acceptance. Amber and Tim Andrews share their son's growth and gains during month spotlighting the development disorder by Annie Mel, Manchester, Iowa. Each week, Manchester residents Amber and Tim Andrews drive about 330 miles to take their son to appointments in the Dubuque area. Owen, who is 4, has autism, a developmental disorder that impairs a person's ability to communicate and interact, and attends a variety of programs to help ensure he continues developing. He goes to Hills and Dales for applied behavior analysis therapy, attends preschool, and works one-on-one with an associate there, and goes to speech and occupational therapy. But the busy weeks and lengthy commutes are worth it to know Owen is receiving the support he needs, Tim Andrews said. Quote, we're learning as we go, he said. We are very thankful for the people at Hills and Dales for what they offer. I think things are in place now, and Owen got an individualized education program, IEP. The biggest thing is the early intervention. We saw the signs. It was just a matter of giving in and getting him the diagnosis, end quote. The Andrews family and local organizations supporting those with autism currently are marking Autism Acceptance Month, which occurs every April. It was formerly known as Autism Awareness Month. Laura Keener, an Autism Services Director at Hills and Dales, said the organization is hosting multiple virtual events to recognize the month. Quote, we're constantly trying to ensure people are educated regarding what autism is and the support we can provide, she said. We are ensuring that in every part of our community, people are accepted in their jobs, in their homes, in their community activities, and are a part of all the pieces that communities like Dubuque and Dyersville have to offer families, end quote. After Owen's first and second birthdays, his parents wondered when he would begin talking. They yearned to hear the words mom and dad, but when he said neither, Amber Andrews decided it was time to take him to the doctor. Quote, I just thought it might have run in my family because my brother didn't start talking until he was like 3 or 4, end quote, Tim Andrews said. Quote, it was early 2019. Amber wanted to take him down to get tested in Iowa City. The wait list for that was like 9 months at the time, end quote. It took about a year to see a specialist and receive Owen's diagnosis, Amber Andrews said. Quote, finally, we did get into a provider in Dubuque that was able to get the diagnosis, but it did take a year, she said. It was extremely frustrating to sit and wait, end quote. Keener said autism spectrum disorders impacts everyone differently, but the diagnosis typically has 3 main characteristics: a communication deficit, deficit with social interactions, and some sort of stereotypical behavior. For Owen, that is the need to be on a steady routine. Quote, all of those deficits really line up to be able to pose some challenges for individuals to be able to interact with other peers their age, end quote, Keener said. Amber Andrews said Owen is still working on his hand gestures, such as waving, as well as social skills. With the local resources they have been able to access, however, he has come a long way and will continue to progress. When he isn't running between appointments, Owen loves to play outside with his sister, Aria, who is 2, take baths or play in the sink, give his mom hugs, and get into things he shouldn't, Amber Andrews said, laughing. Quote, we are so grateful for his therapist and his preschool associate as they share our excitement and joy when he makes progress and gains, she said. It's important to be inclusive with individuals with autism, whether that be in school, the community, and employment opportunities, end quote. And our last front page article, She Unites aims to uplift tri-state women. Nearly 100 women attended the first gathering of a nonprofit that hopes to help residents make new connections by Kaylee Reese. A new nonprofit aimed at empowering and engaging local women. It got off to a resounding start on Wednesday. Nearly 100 women came to the first gathering of She Unites at the Smokestack in Dubuque. The organization aims to bring together women from across this tri-state area to engage in women-centric conversations and make new connections. Quote, I feel like when you bring women together to the table and have things like that available, I think ideas get moved, end quote, said Natalie Finley, who co-founded the group with Adele Herman. Attendees grabbed drinks and mingled with one another before the event officially began on Wednesday. Later, Finley led a presentation titled Finding Your Way. She encouraged the women at the venue to ask themselves to explore what makes them feel fulfilled and what factors guide their decisions. Quote, after 2020, I think a lot of people went through a lot of hardship, end quote, Finley said ahead of the event. Quote, it's really challenging to ask yourself hard questions and ask why you're getting out of bed in the morning, end quote. Finley and Herman told attendees they couldn't believe the turnout for the group's first event. Amanda Sifanitis Smith, one of those in attendance, said she recently moved back to Dubuque and decided to come after seeing the event on Facebook. While she lived in Dubuque when she was a student at Loras College, she said she was still new to living her adult life in there. Quote, I thought it was a neat concept to create a space for women and to empower women, end quote, Sifanitis Smith said. Finley said she came up with the idea for the organization because she wanted a better way to connect with women in the community. She and Herman, who met last year, both felt those connections were missing in their lives since they each moved to Dubuque several years ago, Finley said. Quote, I feel like it got started because both Adele and I were transplants. We didn't work traditional 9-to-5 jobs, Finley said. She Unites was kind of born out of a little bit of FOMO, fear of missing out, to be honest with you, end quote. She Unites officially launched in January with a 4-member board that helps plan monthly gatherings. People who want to attend events don't have to pay any fees, though donations are accepted, Finley said. She said she wanted to create an organic space where women can discuss their lives, successes, and struggles. Quote, I do feel like there's probably a lot of workplace scenarios where women don't get to talk as much or speak up as much. That's just the reality, Finley said. This is a place for women to speak with and be educated, end quote. And Sarah Jackman of Dubuque said before the event started that she wasn't sure what exactly was planned, but she came because she wanted to meet new people. Quote, some of my friends have moved away. I've got 2 young kids. I'm teaching, she said. I just wanted to get out of the house, end quote. Elise Eisbach of Dubuque heard about the event on Facebook and came with several friends. Quote, I just like the idea of meeting new people and being able to socialize without the pressure of networking, end quote, Eisbach said. Future gatherings for She Unites will be held on the 3rd Wednesday of each month at the Smokestack, Finley said. Meetings will feature presentations by women in the community, touching on topics such as finding healthy habits and social skills after the COVID-19 pandemic and protecting one's energy in stressful work atmospheres. Looking ahead, Finley said She Unites leaders would love to give back to local women's organization and hold a workshop in 2022, though no official plans have been made. For now, though, the focus lies in bringing women at the community together. Quote, I think people are just excited to be in the space together, Finley said. People are just so excited to be together, end quote. On page 2, A Life Remembered, longtime Lancaster firefighter leaves lasting legacy of service, selflessness, by Bennett Goldstein, Lancaster, Wisconsin. Dave Kajos found room in his heart to help anyone, a, quote, gentle giant, end quote, who stood at a solid 6'3" tall. He took pride in his kin and in his second family, the firefighters he worked alongside for more than 35 years. Dave, who is 60, a Lancaster native, died on April 12th from kidney and liver failure, according to his daughter, Emily Plang. Quote, no matter what was happening, he was always there for anyone who needed it, end quote, she said. Dave spent much of his childhood at the Lancaster Fire Station, where his father, Ron Kajos, served as an assistant chief for the fire department. By the time a then 18-year-old Dave joined them in 1979, his familiarity with trucks and pumps enabled him to assist Ron during trainings. Dave was hungry to learn more. Quote, within a few years, he was already becoming a mentor for some of our younger people, end quote, said firefighter Gary Reuter, who served as the department's chief from 1992 to 2004. Dave moved through the ranks and established himself as the go-to person for advice. a coordinator for charitable brat feeds, pancake breakfast, and firefighter dances, and the unofficial department mechanic whose knack for vehicle maintenance likely saved taxpayers many a dime. Dave served as the assistant fire chief before retiring from the department in 2014. Quote, he was somebody I really looked up to, said, end quote, said Lancaster's current fire chief, Steve Braun. Quote, we trusted Dave and his judgment. He did a fantastic job of keeping us new folks safe, end quote. Professionally, Dave worked as an electrical lineman with Alliant Energy. He retired in 2019. He and his former wife, Anne Carroll, raised two daughters, Emily Plang and Kelly Pronoschke. The family lived just a block from the city square. Emily said she remembers tossing a football with her father. Quote, as I got into school, I was heavily involved in sports, Emily said. I don't think he ever missed a game, end quote. Dave also rarely missed a cheering for his Green Bay Packers. He often quoted the longtime coach, Vince Lombardi, quote, there is no room for second place, end quote, he would tell Emily, who played volleyball, softball, and soccer in her youth. Emily believes it was her father's selflessness that contributed to his declining health. Dave's family had long tried to assist him through his struggles with alcoholism. Quote, he never really told us why, Emily said. I think stuff affected him because he's so caring. Things for some people just add up, end quote. Like their father, Emily and Kelly grew up at the fire station. Quote, Dad would show us new equipment that would get in and was always very proud of what they were able to do, end quote, Kelly said. Emily recalled waking at night to the blare of the fire whistle. Quote, I would sit at my bedroom window and watch him leave, end quote, she said. Serving on the department made Dave feel connected to something much greater than himself, she said. 30% of area residents fully vaccinated, Telegraph Herald. The Telegraph Herald is recapping changes in local COVID-19 testing and vaccinations. Wednesday's developments included no additional COVID-19-related deaths were reported in the Telegraph Herald's 10-county coverage area between 5 p.m. Tuesday and 5 p.m. Wednesday. 17 more residents of Dubuque County were confirmed to have COVID-19 during the 24-hour span. As of Wednesday, 92,399 residents of the Telegraph Herald's 10-county coverage area had been fully vaccinated, 30.6% of the area's population. In Dubuque, drive-through no-appointment vaccination clinics will be held from noon to 7 p.m. today at the Grand Riverview Center vaccination site. There will be a COVID-19 vaccination clinic from 7 a.m. to 11 a.m. and 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. on Friday, April 23rd at Pearson Hall at the Jackson County Fairgrounds in Maquoketa. To schedule an appointment, visit osterhausrx.com. Click on the COVID information button and complete an online form. I'm going to say that link one more time. osterhausrx.com. The state provided new county-level hospitalization data Wednesday. The data stated that, as of Monday, 5 Dubuque County residents with COVID-19 were hospitalized, a decrease of 3 from Sunday. 4 such residents of Delaware County were hospitalized, an increase of 1 from Sunday. 3 such residents of Jones County were hospitalized, the same as Sunday. No such residents of Clayton and Jackson counties were hospitalized as of Monday, unchanged from the day before. As of 5 p.m. Wednesday, Dubuque County had a 14-day positivity rate of 4.1%. Rates in other area Iowa counties were Clayton County at 3.2%, Delaware County 3.3%, Jackson County 3.7%, and Jones County 2.6%. Statewide, Iowa reported 642 additional residents with COVID-19 in the 24-hour period that ended at 5 p.m. Wednesday, increasing the state's total to 361,424. The state had reported 6 additional related deaths as of 5 p.m. Wednesday, raising the death toll to 5,899. As of Wednesday, 911,336 people had been fully vaccinated in Iowa, an increase of 15,464 from Tuesday. In Wisconsin, there will be a vaccination clinic today from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Broski Center in Platteville. Walk-ins are welcome. For more information, call the Health Department at 608- 723-6416. Wisconsin reported 626 additional confirmed COVID-19 cases Wednesday, increasing its total to 592,262. The state's death toll increased by 3 to 6,721. As of 5 p.m. Wednesday, 1.6 million residents have been fully vaccinated, or 28.8% of the population. In Joe Davis County, Illinois, appointments are available for the Midwest Medical Center Clinic today. To register, visit tinyurl.com/T87NPZYW. There were 2,765 new COVID-19 cases announced Wednesday in Illinois for a state total of 1,309,552. The state reported 22 additional related deaths, increasing the death toll to 21,722. Illinois also reported more than 3.4 million residents were fully vaccinated, 27.4% of the state's population. News in brief, March unemployment rates up in most local counties over 1 year ago. Recently released data show that 7 out of 10 local counties had higher unemployment rates in March of this year than they did during the same month last year. Dubuque County's unemployment rate in March was 4.8%, 1 percentage point higher than March 2020, according to just released data from Iowa Workforce Development. Unemployment rates also were up in surrounding counties. In Clayton County, the rate was 6.6% in March, up from 6.4% a year ago. Delaware County's unemployment rate was 3.7%, up from 3.3%. Jackson County's rate was 5.8%, up from 4.6%, and Jones County's rate was 5.3%, up from 5%. The state of Iowa's unemployment rate was 3.7% last month, up from 2.9% a year ago. The national unemployment rate was 6% in March. In Wisconsin, local counties saw a mix of trends. The unemployment rate was 3.8% in March in Grant County, down from 3.9% in March 2020. The unemployment rate in Crawford County last month was 6.2%, even with 1 year prior. Lafayette County's rate was 3.9% in March, up from 3.4%, and Iowa County's rate was 5.1%, up from 4.1%. Wisconsin's statewide unemployment rate was 3.8% in March, up from 3.2% 1 year prior, according to the state's Department of Workforce Development. Illinois has not yet released county-level unemployment data for March. The statewide unemployment rate last month was 7.1%, up from 3.7% a year ago, according to the Illinois Department of Employment Security. Voices Productions Travel Dubuque announced a 10-year mural initiative. A collaborative between Voices Productions and Travel Dubuque will yield an ongoing mural initiative in downtown Dubuque. The two entities will bring a new mural annually over the next 10 years to a wall at 105 Locust Street that recently featured a bison mural. Each year, the wall will be repainted in an effort to showcase new artists and explore themes in relation to life in Dubuque, a press release states. Connecticut-based painter Ryan Christensen, known as A.R.Y.C.Y., began work on the first mural Wednesday, according to Voices Productions chairman Sam Mulgrew. Quote, because Major League Baseball is coming to Dubuque County this summer, we decided to explore the theme of Dubuque's historical relationship to the game featuring Charles Comiskey, end quote, Mulgrew said. The Chicago White Sox and New York Yankees will play on August 12th at a field adjacent to the Field of Dreams movie site near Dyersville. Christensen also painted, quote, charging bison, end quote, the previous mural at the location. Police, the Dyersville and Dubuque Police Department, County Sheriff's Department reported. Joshua C. Bissell, 32, of Dyersville, Iowa, was arrested at 10:09 a.m. Tuesday in Dyersville on charges of third offense, operating while intoxicated and driving while suspended. David W. Wren, Jr., 52, no permanent address, reported the theft of a vehicle worth $300 between 4:35 and 7:10 p.m. Tuesday from the 4100 block of Dodge Street. Maxwell D. Potter, 27, reported the theft of a $1,000 laptop from a vehicle at about 3:35 a.m. Tuesday outside his residence. Minky Car Care, 2195 Central Avenue, reported the theft of $691 worth of auto parts between March 8th and 23rd from the business. Letters to the editor. Iowa ethanol bills would limit choices at pump from Shari Thurston, Landis Road, Anamosa. Gas prices rising. Now only Iowans will be subject to the gas increase. Here in Iowa, we have legislation SF549 and HF859 for the up for vote, and if passed, will dictate to you what gasolines will be available in Iowa. This legislation takes away your choice to select regular unleaded or no ethanol gasoline. It will also make all retail gas stations limit their facility to one premium gas pump. It also gives Governor Reynolds the ability to change what is available going forward for Iowans. Why are we letting government take away free enterprise? Contact your representatives and senators to vote no to SF549 and HF859 now. What's next? Will our big box stores be mandated to only sell Amana products? Will our implement dealers only be able to sell John Deere products? The legislation limits the non-ethanol gas to a premium grade, which we all know is 30 to 40 cents higher in price than the regular unleaded gasoline. Gas for your lawnmower, weed whip, chainsaw, or your snowblower, you will pay more at the pump. These types of small engines do not run well or last long with the use of ethanol-blended gasolines. Retail gas stations should have the right to sell the types of gasoline that their customers demand. Iowans that stand for free enterprise and opportunity of choice, call your state representatives and tell them to vote no to SF549 and HF859 today. Our next letter, end county mask mandate by Memorial Day, from Brandon Staddle, Torrey Pines Road, Asbury. As Memorial Day approaches, it's time for the Dubuque County Board of Supervisors to end the county mask mandate. By that time, anyone who has the desire to get the COVID-19 vaccination will have had the opportunity to get one. The people that have not gotten the shot have made a decision that they distrust the vaccine more than they worry about COVID. That is well within their freedoms as an American, and I don't fault them. I do have an issue with the Board of Supervisors maintaining that the entire population of Dubuque County has to continue to wear their masks because of a portion of the population won't get vaccinated. That is not how a society or democracy works. As the ordinance currently states, the mask mandate cannot end until all of the Category 1B has had the opportunity to get a shot. The County Health Department Director Patrice Lambert stated, quote, "I don't think we'll ever be able to say we are completely done with 1B, end quote. So unless I'm reading her statement incorrectly, we will have to wear masks forever. This is unacceptable. If this is the case, it is our duty to vote out the entire board and find someone who can lead. Take 10 seconds and email or write your supervisors and end the mask mandate by Memorial Day." And our last letter, rest in peace, George Floyd, from Ruth Rote, Noonan Street, Dubuque. "Mr. Floyd, rest in peace, dear child of God, who knows how you left this earth, ending a horrible death as he knew you from your birth. Nothing is ever hidden from Almighty God, as he is the final judge that everyone will have to stand before when we leave the earth." Almanac, today is Thursday, April 22nd, the 112th day of 2021. There are 253 days left in the year. On this date in 1864, Congress authorized the use of the phrase, quote, "In God we trust," end quote, on the U.S. coins. In 1889, the Oklahoma land rush began at noon as thousands of homesteaders staked claims. In 1898, with the United States and Spain on the verge of war, the U.S. Navy began blockading Cuban ports. Congress authorized creation of the first U.S. volunteer cavalry, also known as the Rough Riders. In 1915, the first full-scale of use of deadly chemicals in warfare took place as German forces unleashed chlorine gas against Allied troops at the start of the Second Battle of Ypres in Belgium during World War I. Thousands of soldiers are believed to have died. In 1970, millions of Americans concerned about the environment observed the first, quote, "Earth Day," end quote. In 2015, a federal judge in Philadelphia approved a settlement agreement expected to cost the NFL $1 billion over 65 years to resolve thousands of concussion lawsuits. Moving to the obituaries, Esther F. Santillo. Esther F. Santillo, 98, of Dubuque, died Saturday, April 17, 2021. Visitation will be from 9 to 10:15 a.m. Friday, April 23rd, at St. Columbkill's Catholic Church, followed by Mass of Christian Burial Friday at 10:30 a.m. Burial will be in Mount Calvary Cemetery. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, masks will be required. The service will be live streamed on the Eaglehoff Siegert and Casper Funeral Home Facebook page. Esther was born March 15, 1923, in the family home of Comstock, Wisconsin, the daughter of Michael and Margarita Ricci DeGidio. On June 9, 1945, she married Samuel, known as Sam, Santillo in Cumberland, Wisconsin. She and Sam moved from Minneapolis, Minnesota to Dubuque in 1955 so Sam could set up the Flex Steel Spring Division. Sam preceded her in death on October 27, 1985. Esther was a very active member at St. Columbkill's Church for over 65 years. She helped with the lunch program, baked and cooked for funeral dinners, was in the pen pal program with the school, visited the sick, was a dead mother, and was a member of the Rosary Society. Esther stayed home to raise her family and loved to cook, bake, and garden. She is survived by three children, Rita A., spouse Joseph Snyder of Palatine, Illinois, Michael A., spouse Anita Santillo of Dubuque, and Regina M., spouse Greg Meester of San Diego, California. Five grandchildren, Vincent, spouse Gloria Snyder of Garrison, Iowa, Bridget, spouse Paul Jopa of Hopkins, Minnesota, Giovanna M. Santillo of Brooklyn, New York, Nicholas Santillo of Dubuque, and Sarah Meester of Chicago, Illinois, and five great-grandchildren, Alex and Ben Jopa and Gianna, Jocelyn and Johanna Snyder. She was also preceded in death by her parents and her 11 siblings. The Eaglehoff Siegert and Casper Funeral Home and Crematory is in charge of arrangements. Memorials may be made to the Esther Santillo Memorial Fund. The family would like to thank the nurses and staff at Unity Point Health Finley Hospital and the staff at Eagle Point Place for their love and care. Cindy K. Redding. Cindy K. Redding, 62, of Dubuque, passed away unexpectedly on Sunday, April 18, 2021, at Unity Point Finley Hospital. Visitation will be from 10 a.m. until 1 p.m. Funeral service on Saturday, April 24th, at Eaglehoff Siegert and Casper Funeral Home and Crematory, 2659 John F. Kennedy Road, Dubuque. Reverend Karen Candy will officiate. Interment will be in St. John's Cemetery, Centralia. Masks are required at the funeral home. Condolences and memories may be shared with the family at www.eaglehoffsiegertcasper.com. Cindy was born January 23, 1959, in Dubuque, the daughter of Robert and Shirley Konecki Mills. She graduated from Hempstead High School in 1977. Cindy was employed at Metrix Company for 22 years. Cindy enjoyed camping at Leisure Lake, having a cold beer, and listening to country music. She was a fan of the Kansas City Chiefs and the Cubs, but not the Cardinals. She was a meticulous housekeeper and put more miles on her vacuum cleaner than most people put on their vehicles. Cindy loved spending time with Tito, her Basset Hound puppy, and especially her grandchildren. Cindy is survived by her husband, Chris Redding of Dubuque, her sons, Eric, spouse Valerie Key of Marion, Iowa, and Corey, spouse Lacey Redding of Dubuque, her grandchildren, Ryan, Jackson, Clayton, Brooklyn, and Preston, her mother, Shirley Mills of Dubuque, two brothers, Stephen, known as Reno Mills of Key West, Iowa, and Randy, spouse Gayla Mills of Dubuque, her brothers-in-law, Steve, spouse Mary Jean Redding of Dubuque, Tom, spouse Colleen Redding of Mount Vernon, Iowa, and John Redding Jr. of Dubuque, her sister-in-law, Jennifer Dawn Bloomquist of Goodlettsville, Tennessee, and many aunts, uncles, nieces, nephews, and cousins. She was preceded in death by her father, Robert, and her parents-in-law, John and Barbara Redding. Memorials may be made to the family. Ramona Stubbs. Ramona Stubbs died peacefully at Stonehill Health Center on Monday, April 6, 2020. A funeral mass will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, April 24, 2021 at its St. Anthony's Catholic Church. Family and friends may gather after 9 a.m. at the church until the time of mass. Leonard retired funeral home and crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road, is assisting the family. Patricia Bourgeois, Cuba City, Wisconsin. Patricia Bourgeois, 75, of Cuba City, died on Friday, April 9th, 2021. Visitation will be held from 9 to 10:15 a.m. Monday, April 26th, at Casey McNett Funeral Home and Cremation Services in Cuba City, where a funeral service will be held at 10:30 a.m. Thomas E. McArdle, Sr. Thomas E. McArdle, Sr., 64, of Dubuque, Iowa, passed away suddenly on Friday, April 16th, 2021, at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. Visitation will be from 3 to 6 p.m. Friday, April 23rd, 2021, at Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road, where a sharing time will be held at 6 p.m. Burial will be at a later date. He was born April 17th, 1956, in Cherokee, Iowa, the son of Robert and Helen Miles McArdle. He served in the United States Army, and on August 12th, 2006, he married Kelly K. Krupfel. He enjoyed spending time with his wife, children, and grandchildren, along with his nieces, nephews, and their children. He always showed so much passion for everyone involved in his life. He enjoyed his drinks and spending time with friends. Tom was most recently self-employed. He was never afraid of a new challenge, despite having only one full arm to work with. He would take on anything and was always willing to help others. He is survived by his wife of 14 years, Kelly, daughters Amanda and Tracy of Dubuque, and Melissa of LA. His son, Thomas Jr. of Gutenberg, 11 grandchildren and 2 great-grandchildren, 3 sisters, Sharon Callaghan, Doris, spouse Lawrence Puccio, and Sally, spouse Rick Lang, all of Dubuque, his brother James, spouse Amy Sargent of Dubuque, and brother-in-law Richard Schmidt of Dubuque. He was preceded in death by his mother and stepfather, his sister Judy Schmidt, and brother-in-law Mike Callaghan. Jeanette L. Geisman, Piosta, Iowa. Jeanette L., known as Janet Summer Geisman, 77, of Piosta, Iowa, passed away on April 19th, 2021, at Mercy One Medical Center. Visitation will be from 9 to 11 a.m. Friday, April 23rd, 2021, at Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road, where services will be held at 11 a.m. with Reverend Rodney Allers officiating. Private family burial will be in Ebenezer Cemetery, Wingville Township, Wisconsin. Janet was born on August 1st, 1943, in Epworth, Iowa, the daughter of Leonard and Florence Bonnard Summer. She attended St. Clement's School, Bankston, Iowa, and retired from Dubuque Stamping Company as a mechanist in 2008. She enjoyed spending time with her grandchildren and dancing, winning many dancing contests with her significant other, Bob, over the years. She was survived by her children, Lisa's spouse, Wayne Bergfeld, Bernard, Iowa, and their children, Megan and Dylan Bergfeld, Jody's spouse, Sean Williams, Cedar Falls, Iowa, their son, Connor Williams, Dan's spouse, Oksana Geisman of Ames, Iowa, and their son, Leo Geisman, daughter-in-law Julie Geisman, and her daughter Kira Geisman. She is also survived by her sisters Carol Eartham, Magdalene Lopata, and Norma, spouse Jim Perry, along with many nieces and nephews and great-nieces and nephews. Janet was preceded in death by her son, Dean Geisman, significant other Robert Witzig, her brother Kenneth, spouse Elaine Summer, brothers-in-law Jill Lopata, Jean Hannon, and Alan Earthrum. A special thank you to Finley Home Care Medical Associates and Mercy One staff for their love and care. Roger Gillis, Denver. Roger Gillis, 78, of Denver and formerly of Dubuque, died on Monday, April 19th, 2021. Horan and McNaughty Funeral Home and of Denver is assisting the family. Paul H. Suglink, Paul Henry Suglink, 85, of Dubuque, Iowa, passed away on April 19th, 2021, due to a brief illness. On his final day, he was surrounded by his children and his wife, Julie, whom he adored more than anything else in the world. After graduating from Gutenberg High School, he entered the military and served in the United States Marine Corps for 3 years, 1953 to 1956. Paul was a sergeant in the 2nd Marine Division, 2nd Engineer Battalion, and served in the Korean War. He married the love of his life, Julie She Quirk, in Gutenberg, Iowa, on April 25th, 1959, and went on to have 5 children. Paul is survived by his wife of 62 years, Julie Shekekwart Sogling, his children, Ann Sogling Koch, spouse Mike, David, spouse Lori
James, Diane LaPierre, spouse Chris, and Rose Bakey. Six grandchildren, Sean, spouse Sarah, Aaron, spouse Kim, Christopher, spouse Amy, Anthony, spouse Anthony, Nicole, and Jacob. Four great-grandchildren, Cameron, Clay, Skylar, and Nevaeh. Two brothers, Keith, spouse Susie, and Clark. Two sisters-in-law, Shirley Sogling and Mary Sue Wyand, and many other nieces and nephews. Paul was preceded in death by his parents, Clarence and Alma Sugling, his brother Roger Sugling, sister Marianne Sugling, in-laws Hubert and Lorraine Shequirk, and brother-in-law Thomas Shequirk. Private family service with military honors accorded by the Dubuque Marine Corps League will be at Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road. Online condolences may be left at www.leonardfuneralhome.com. In lieu of flowers, please send donations to the Dubuque Marine Corps League in memory of Paul. Cheryl A. Lovelace, quote, "'Tis a fearful thing to love what death can touch, a holy thing to love, for your life has lived in me, your laugh once lifted me, your word was a gift to me," end quote. Death came to Cheryl, known as Sherry Brock Lovelace, on April 21st, 2021. For 64 years, she lived with intention, regarded her family as her greatest treasure, loved her husband madly, and immersed herself in deep friendships while working for change. A visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. Friday, April 23rd, 2021, at Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home, 3860 Asbury Road. Masks are required, and we ask that you please respect our current social distancing requirements. If you are not feeling well or are unable to attend, we encourage you to visit www.hskfhcares.com to send a message to Sherry's family. A memorial service for Sherry will be at 10:30 a.m. Saturday, April 24th, 2021 at St. Luke's United Methodist Church, 1199 Main Street, Dubuque, with Reverend Stephanie Shulman officiating. Masks are required, and we ask that you please respect our current social distancing requirements. The service will be live streamed on Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home's Facebook page and St. Luke's website, www.stlukesdbq.org, and will be available to view later at www.hskfhcares.com. She was born in Oskaloosa, Iowa on June 6, 1956. She grew up with her parents and two siblings in a small neighborhood filled with children. Both of her grandparents lived in the same town and added it to the stable experience of childhood. Mike and Sherry began their own business in 1999, Lovelace Tri-State Insurance. Over the past 20 years, they have had the privilege of serving their clients and growing a business from scratch. Quote, "I am most thankful for Dr. Christian Schulthess, formerly of Dubuque, Iowa, and presently at the Mission Cancer and Blood Center in Des Moines, Iowa. Christian has loved and cared for our family so personally. Everyone should feel so blessed by their physician. Also, a deep gratitude for Hospice of Dubuque, specifically Nurse Betsy, Social Worker Jenny, and Receptionist Lori. This group of people are evidence of angels on earth and love to Pastor Stephanie Shulm of St. Luke's for her abiding faith and listening skills and demonstration of compassion and love. Be well," end quote. In lieu of flowers, memorial gifts may be made in Sherry's memory to the following: Jesus Fund, a food voucher program at St. Luke's UMC Dubuque, Hospice of Dubuque, or gift to the Avery Foundation, a local foundation that assists those affected by cancer. Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home and Cremation Service is in care of the arrangements. A photo tribute can be viewed and condolences sent to the family by visiting Cheryl's obituary at www.hskfhcares.com. Moving to the sports section, Telegraph Herald Athlete of the Week, Audrey Bierman, Western Dubuque. Bierman starts on a blistering pace. WD sprinter breaks two school records on way to Drake Relays today, by Shannon Mum. Missing out on last year's canceled track and field season was all the motivation Audrey Bierman needed to come back faster and stronger for her junior season. The Western Dubuque sprinter used that time training harder than ever, and she is off to a record-breaking start to the spring track and field season. The Telegraph Herald Athlete of the Week recently broke two school records that dated to 1982. On Friday, April 9th, at the Dyersville Beckman Relays, she broke the school record for the 400-meter dash, running in 57.84 seconds. She also won the 100-meter dash and anchored the winning 4x100-meter relay on Saturday, April 17th. She broke the school record for the 200-meter dash in 25.47 seconds, also setting a Lynn Mars relay meet record. She went on to win the 400-meter dash and was a member of the winning 4x100-meter relay. Quote, Audrey is a dream athlete to coach, end quote, Western Dubuque coach Josie Limick said. She sets a great example for her teammates, and she knows what needs to get done in order to be successful, end quote. Bierman was a three-time state qualifier as a freshman. When she earned medals in the 400-meter dash and the sprint medley, she has hopes of return trip to Des Moines this spring. Quote, I would love to be a state champion, she said. I hope that is a realistic goal, end quote. It seems that her goal is within reach, as she is currently ranked number 2 in the state in the 200-meter dash. She is also ranked in the 100 and 400. Quote, I know that people are out to beat me, but I love competing with the best, Bierman said. The competitiveness is what I love about the sport, end quote. Earlier this week, Bierman won the 100 while helping her sprint medley team take first place honors at Dubuque Senior. Quote, I never expected to be running this well this early on, she said. I thought these times would come at state, so it was a pleasant surprise, end quote. Bierman currently holds the school record for the 200-400 sprint medley and 4x400 relay. She will compete in the Drake relays for the second time in her career today in the 100 and 400. Quote, it's really hard to pick what events we should put her in because she is just so good at everything she does, end quote, Limick said. Quote, she wants to win every race she competes in. She just continues to get better, and we are excited to have her back for another year, end quote. Bierman remains undecided about her college plans, but would love to continue running at the collegiate level. Quote, it would be amazing to run for a college, and I'm hoping after this season I'll have a better idea of where I want to go, end quote, Bierman said. Our next article, commentary, it sure felt great getting back to the tennis courts. Covering 4 city matches in 1 shift was a little hectic, but worth it. By Steve Ortman, Telegraph Herald senior sports reporter. Last Thursday, I covered 4 city tennis matches at 4 different locations. With last year's tennis season getting shelved by in the midst of the coronavirus pandemic, it sure felt great to get back on the tennis courts. I can only imagine what it felt like for the coaches and players. My day started in Epworth, where the highly ranked Dubuque Wolhart boys blanked a young Western Dubuque squad 9-0. I can't help but feel a little sense of pride every time I visit the Bobcats' beautiful courts that lay adjacent to the high school. After 34 long years of making do in Epworth, Farley, Peosta, and even Dubuque since the spring of 1982, my stories on the program's ever-growing need for their own courts was the spark that set in motion the developing of their official home courts in 2016. And that's not my own analogy. As former WD boys coach Carl Stupin told me personally what my stories meant to making it happen. Honestly, it's one of the proudest moments of my writing career. Plus, it provided the never-ending joke in the office that I'm heading out to the, quote, Steve Ortman at tennis courts, end quote. My next stop was Ruse Courts at Dubuque Hempstead as the Mustang girls battled past a Dubuque senior 6-3 on a day that struggled to get to 50 degrees. I've learned over the years that you can never underestimate the wind at Ruse Courts. I swear it could be pushing 70 degrees, but if the wind's going up there, it's going to feel like 40. Thankfully, I had my winter jacket and swank ear muffins. Couldn't mess up the hair with a full stocking hat. The talent on display was immense, from watching Peyton Connolly and Megan Sleep take over the leadership role for the Mustangs, to Riley Weber winning a thriller at number 4 singles, or seniors' stellar 1-2 punch at the top of the lineup of Natalie Kaiser and Riley O'Donnell. It was a pleasure to watch. It was a group of players with state-level experience and others with the potential moving forward. Next, I jaunted over to O'Connor Tennis Center as the Walhart girls hosted Western Dubuque. For the first time in probably 3 or 4 years, I had the honor of chatting once again with the legend himself, Jim Furstenberg. He is the tennis royalty in Dubuque, having led the Walhart boys to 7 state championship team in 2004, 2005, 2006, 2007, 2008, 2009, and 2011. I couldn't have missed him in his bright red Happy Joe's jacket, and he couldn't have made me feel any more welcome. Quote, well, if it isn't one of the greatest sports writers I've ever known, end quote, he said as I approached him. Truly a legend, in my book anyway. The match was tied at 3-3, heading to doubles, so I figured I should head over to Meyer Courts at Senior to see how the match between the Rams and Hempstead boys was going. Doubles was just getting started there as well, in another 3-3 tie. That was a little frustrating, since a track meet was also happening at Dalzell Field, and it took me a few minutes to find a parking spot. But with 4 stories to write on a deadline, I decided to run into the office and get going on my stories. After about 40 minutes of mostly eating snacks and going potty, I swung back to the Walhart. That match came down to the wire, and darkness was beginning to fall as Maddie Heidersheet and Ellie McDermott were wrapping up a 5-4 victory for the Bobcats, with the temperatures dropping at near 40 degrees, while her assistant coach, Sarah Hutchinson, went to turn on the court lights. I promptly quipped, quote, can you turn on the heaters too? End quote. I'm a riot, I know. My tennis adventure wrapped up back at Senior, where Kareem Cassis, he was the number 5 player 2 years ago, earned a pair of wins at number 1 to lead the Mustangs in sealing a 5-4 win over the Rams. Notwithstanding my run back to the office, after nearly 3 hours of covering some terrific local tennis, I turned to my desk to knock out 4 stories. They weren't the greatest or longest stories I've ever written, but I sure felt like I delivered an ace in getting coverage to all 8 city teams in a single shift. But it also felt like something was missing. Not only was the season taken away in the spring of 2020, but the tennis community lost a beautiful soul in Walhart boys coach Julie Westerkamp, who passed away after a courageous battle with cancer. Following her diagnosis, I confided in Julie that my mom passed away from cancer. At that point, not a meeting between us passed where she wouldn't tell me that she always thought about my mom and prayed for her every day. Covering high school tennis will never be the same, but I still find joy in the game and the people, just as Julie would want all of us to continue doing. It's you, Julie, who I now pray for every day, my friend. Throwback Thursday, Mississippi River hits second highest crest 20 years ago by Eric Hogstrom. The Mississippi River rose to its second highest crest in history 20 years ago at Dubuque, as floodwaters swamped several area communities. Snowmelt and heavy rainfall during the second wettest spring in Minnesota history sent floodwater streaming south into the tri-state area in April 2001. The Mississippi River crested at 25.4 feet at the Dubuque Railroad Bridge on April 21st and at 22.58 feet at Bellevue on April 22nd. Both the second highest recorded for these locations. While a flood wall protected most of Dubuque from the rising waters, other communities weren't as fortunate. Officials reported water entering at the basements of more than 150 homes in Cassville, Wisconsin, and Iowa National Guard troops were dispatched to Marquette, Iowa to patrol leaves and man pumps levees. Floodwaters swamped the causeway leading it to the Mississippi River span that connects Sebul, Iowa with Savannah, Illinois, forcing motorists to take a 40-mile detour. Here is how the Telegraph Herald reported on some of the widespread flooding in its April 21st, 2001 edition. Iowans work, wait as river rises, Mequette, Iowa. Mississippi River levees and dikes are holding for now in northeast Iowa towns, but the people living and working behind them are nervous. The river crest was expected to roll past Marquette, McGregor, Gutenberg, and Friday night, and all 3 towns were prepared. The heavy rains also were predicted for the area, and that was making officials jittery. Marquette was a busy, noisy place Friday, with the whir of sump pumps on every street and the droning of helicopters and low-flying aircraft overhead, the National Guard only allowing residents and flood workers to enter town on the one roadway still open. Emergency levees have been built to keep out the Mississippi River on the east side of town and the flooding Bloody Run Creek on the west side. Water from both was only inches from the top of the dikes, with the river level at 23.74 feet. quote, our focus now is to maintain what we have, to just keep the water held back, end quote, said Major Ben Correll of the National Guard as he handled several phone lines at the Emergency Command Center in Marquette. The soldiers and local emergency workers will patrol all the dikes 24 hours a day looking for, quote, hot spots, end quote, seepage or boils that could develop into major breaches. Officials with federal and state agencies have been working all week with city and county officials to save the river town of 480 from inundation. 1 mile south of McGregor, townsfolk and businesses are also surrounded by a similar earthen levee. When the river crept past one high water prediction, workers added layers of sandbags. Curious onlookers took photos and videos of the flood scenes as city workers moved more sandbags into strategic positions. The first floor of the Holiday Shores Motel behind them was filled with flood water. A large banner hung from the second floor read, quote, "We will be back," end quote. Again, that was a Throwback Thursday article from 2001. And that does it for today's reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Thursday, April 22nd on Iris. I'm your reader, Erin. You can access today's reading online at iowaradioreading.org. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you have a wonderful day.